Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 51 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers. It is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, and role-playing games. Coming to you from the beautiful city of Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world.
Not the professional football capital of the world, it would seem.
Not this week, man.
The Indianapolis Colts in their first game of the season looked terrible.
And Glass Joe Sanders busting his bicep there. It's not a good start. When was the last time that the Colts lost their opening game?
A few years ago against the Bears.
Okay, I couldn't even remember how long. It's been so long.
Yeah, we bounced back though.
Yeah, but anyway, we're not here as always to talk about football.
Well, we have to play games to get our minds off of it.
Exactly. It's like drinking away the pain.
That's right.
a little different.
But not destroying your life.
That's right. But today we got a great episode for you. We're going to be talking about, it's kind of an annual event now, with the second annual. We're going to be talking about our top 11 games.
Yeah. Now some shows will do a top 10 list.
Yeah. Some perhaps, shows do a lot of top 10 lists.
Yeah, perhaps to the point of nausea.
Exactly.
But we only give you one list a year, and there's a top 11 list, because frankly we go to 11.
That's right that's one more.
One more than 10.
You get it? Yeah. So we're going to be giving our top 11 games of all time, what's currently sitting at the top of our personal list there, and so we'll be doing that as part of our program. We're also going to be giving you a couple of reviews, and like we mentioned last episode, we're going free form.
Yeah,
we're going free form. So you know, anything could happen. Buckle up your seatbelts. You know,
ninjas will jump out.
Who knows what's going to happen? But we got a lot of great stuff coming up for you, and it all gets started right now. So as always, we need to start off by thanking our great sponsor, Myriad Games, who is the proud sponsor of Game On with Cody and John on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. And Cody, tell us about what's going on at Myriad.
Well, Myriad Games is a partner in an enterprise known as Gamesalute.com. It's kind of a network of friendly professional gaming stores all around the world that seek to serve you, the gaming public, better. And they are doing a really cool event in October. They are partnering with a charity called Extra Life. Think of like a walkathon, but without the exercise. Basically, you get people to pledge, you know, $1, $5 per hour that you're going to game. a hardship, I know.
Boy, that's rough.
That's right. And they will take the money that is donated through that and give it to the Children's Miracle Network, who will dispense it to local children's hospitals in your area. So the idea is that Game Salute, partnering with Extra Life, is going to talk with game stores and gaming groups around the country and have them organize their own events and, you know, get that going all over the world. They're going to do a big event at Myriad Homeworld in Manchester and Salem, New Hampshire.
Myriad Homeworld?
That's right, the home base.
Okay.
The home office. And if you check out gamesalute.com, they'll actually have more information, and you can find out places nearby that you can participate and benefit this great cause.
Sounds like it's going to be a great event.
Win.
Yeah, awesome. Well, cool. So, you know, Myriad Games, yay.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go on to games we've been playing, do the rundown of that. Mm-hmm. And Cody, what have you been playing? So I keep deferring to you.
That is very good. The bulk of the games that I have played, we went to my in-laws over the Labor Day weekend and played a few games there. Got to play some Long Shot, a favorite of mine.
Fine game. Fine Mr. game. Chris Handy, the designer there.
Yeah, and we played that. What else? Let's see. Oh, got to play.
Did you win?
Yes, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, I won.
I found the only hard thing about that game is that the end game is a lot of math. There's just a lot of money
that
changes.
Bad.
Well, there's a lot of money that changes hands, but... Yep. But awesome.
Yep. Played Binary Homeworlds for the first time.
How was that?
It's a really deep strategic game. And Binary Homeworlds is one of the many games you can play with the Ice House Pyramids that Looney Labs puts out that John loves. And
negative.
So tried Binary Homeworlds. It's a really deep game. I would have to play it a few more times to really get a feel for it. But it's kind of... it's really chess-like in a lot of ways.
What's the theme?
The theme is that you are spaceships trying to invade
blah,
another...
Blah, 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 blah.
Wow. That's disrespectful. We played another Looney Labs game, Back to the Future, the card game. Got a few games of that in. Very fun game. Played the Three Commandments.
Oh, no. What is that one all about? I don't think I've ever heard of that one.
Yeah, it's a game put out by, I believe, Rio Grande. I might be wrong.
Okay.
It's a party-ish game. I don't know if I'd call it a straight party game, where each turn someone is the high priestess, and you're trying to gain, you know, followers and kind of piety points, basically. And there's all these cards with different rules on them. Some of them could be... if, you know, someone touches their arm, or, you know, there's sticks with different colors. If, you know, there are two sticks of the same color in a space. So there's this board and all of these kind of different colored sticks. And it's just a party game where you kind of, you'll do an action. And the high priestess is the only one who knows what gives points and what takes away points. Oh. And he or she will just announce how many points you got. You got two. And then it passes to the next person. And they do something with the sticks. And then they wait. And they may say one or three or zero or two. You know.
Oh, so it's like Mastermind, but with actions?
Yeah, it's kind of this... Mastermind's actually a good description, because there's really... Once you figure it out, if you figure it out, you can score a lot of points.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Mastermind with a party twist and a more tactile feel, if that makes any sense.
Huh, I'd never heard of
it's
that
hard
game.
It's hard to describe. Okay. Fun little game.
Cool.
Played some other things. Played Time's Up Title Recall. Played that here at kind of a game day here with some of our local gaming group members.
Cool.
Love that game.
Did you get a copy of that finally?
I did.
Oh, awesome.
Did.
I know you've been waiting for it because it was out of print for a while,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they did a reprint of it, and it looks exactly the same, and at least to me. And it's a fun game. I mean, oh, yeah. I can't talk that game up enough. Played some more Long Shot.
Any RPGs the last couple weeks?
No, we've been kind of on a hiatus with Kaylin's Pathfinder game. We've been traveling a lot, so we haven't got a chance to get back into that. I know you're going to start your Rogue Trader game here in the next couple months.
So I am.
Very excited.
Yep. Cody and I, before we turn the mics on, we actually were talking about that I'm going to sit down for one more session of sort of a pep talk GM Academy primer session to get me all ready, so I have all the things. I'm all about measuring twice and cutting once, so I want to try to make sure I have my ducks in a row before we get started. But
he'll be fine.
It's gonna be fun.
He would be surprised at how little prep I actually have.
No, I've played in your games. I'm not that surprised.
And and the final game that I played that was a surprise to me was Zombie Dice by Steve Jackson.
It's by Steve Jackson,
yeah,
and maker of Munchkin,
yeah,
your favorite game,
no,
of all time,
no, number one on the top 11,
yeah, no, doubtful.
This was I heard a lot of good reviews on it. I decided I'd pick it up. You know, it wasn't that expensive, and it is a fun little push your luck game that you can play over and over, and it's fresh. It's just a fun filler game, but I had a blast with it. I could play it a couple times in a row.
Is there like a board, or is it
just... No, it's a cup of dice. Special dice. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And without getting too much into it, it's you have dice that have, you know, you're a zombie, you're trying to get brains, right?
Sure.
And so on each die there are brains, footsteps, and shotgun blasts.
Okay.
You can stop at any time during your turn and collect how many brains you've rolled. But if you ever get three or more shotgun blasts, your turn immediately ends and you score no points and you pass the dice.
Oh.
And so there are three different colors of dice. There are green dice that have brains on three sides, I think like two footsteps and one shotgun blast. You have yellow dice, which only have brains on two sides and another shotgun blast. And then you have the red dice, which only have brains on one side and three shotgun blasts on the other ones, and footsteps filling out the rest.
Uh-huh.
So the game comes in a cup. It doesn't even come in a box. It comes in a little
cup.
Like
a cardboard cup?
Yeah, like a cardboard cup.
Oh, okay.
And so on your turn, you reach in and you pull out three dice. You don't know what color. You see, you roll them. Any brains you set aside, any shotgun blasts you set aside, and any footsteps stay out there. Then if you decide to keep going and pressing your luck, you draw up to three. So if you have one footstep, you draw two more dice.
Oh, I see.
Roll those, and then whenever you decide to stop, or if you get shotgunned, your turn ends, you score, and you pass the dice. Once someone has 13 or more, everyone gets one more turn to try and tie or beat them, and the game ends.
That sounds fun.
It really is fun. We should try it.
Yeah,
for a Steve Jackson game, it wasn't completely terrible.
Okay, all right, that sounds fine.
So, Zombie Dice, high praise for me. Fun little filler.
Wow.
What have you been playing?
I have to be honest. I have not been playing as much as I usually do in a 2-week time period.
Slacker.
And that's partially due to the fact that I'm I'm sort of trying to turn over a bit of a new leaf on the health front. Mm-hmm. So I have joined a gym. And I know that that is a typical thing for an overweight person to do, is to join a gym. But I'm really committed to being healthier, and, you know, for my kids and my family and all that kind of stuff, for myself. And so I've been spending a lot of time at the gym. So I've been
want to increase your speed at the dealer hall.
That's true.
So I want to be able to get around those.
Yeah, I want to get around those folks that are standing there texting in the middle of the aisle, right?
Preach it.
And so I've been doing that a lot and been focusing more on that. But I did get a chance to play some games. Played another game of Innovation with mm-hmm. Cody and with our buddy Dare, and still loving that game.
Oh yeah,
I think that's really good.
I'm so bad at it.
Yeah, I'm not very good at it.
I don't think I will ever win, but played that too. Introduced that to the in-laws, not to take over your
segment. No, that's fine.
They really liked it.
Yeah, and I think the thing I'm liking about it the most is the same reason why I like Dominion, is that you can, and Dominion's even more strategic than an Innovation, I would say. But you try your best, you plan out what you're going to do, and then if you suck at it, the bleeding's only going to last for about 20-30 right. minutes, and then you can play again. You know,
you can't walk in with a strategy and win every time.
Yeah,
it's completely right. tactical.
Yep, and so I think that makes it a lot of fun, and you know, keeps it kind of light. You don't feel like it's a real heavy game. So anyway, still loving that one. And what else did we play? We played a game of Alien Frontiers,
yeah.
And let's talk a little bit more about that one, if that's okay. Alien Frontiers is a game by Clever Mojo Games. That's a small publisher, and they used a very interesting method for getting their game produced.
This is the first I had heard of it. This intrigues me to no end. I kind of wish I knew about it when it was first out there.
Yeah, there's a website called Kickstarter.com, and what that site is for is it helps people fund different projects, and a lot of the projects that are on there are like art projects or short films, things like that, kind of artistic endeavors that people are trying to do. And there's also a whole section for games, and a lot of the games are video games, but there's also some things that are RPGs and board games. And so the folks that put this game together from Clever Mojo use this as the method for raising money for them to be able to produce their game. So it's almost like a pre-order system, sort of. They basically set a target goal for the amount of money that they want to raise, and then they have certain levels of, it's like, you know, public television almost. Yeah. Like, you know, if you
donate $10,000, you get a mug.
you get Barry Manilow's Greatest Hits on CD. But
support public television radio.
Exactly. But the you know, for a certain amount, for like $50, something like that, you'll get a copy of the game. So it's like a pre-order. But if you donate more, you get the copy of the game, but you'll get like a framed signed piece of the artwork or something. You know,
promo cards.
You get additional things for more that you money that you put in there. So the people that are donating are really bought into this. It's like, you know, we're all in this together to get
almost
this
like
game
a patron,
produced.
Really.
Yeah, and they raised, I want to say it was like $14,000.
I think it was like $15,000.
Like $15,000, something like that. So just a ton of money to help, and they wanted to do a 1,000 copy printing of the game from, you know, just kind of self-published printing. And let me tell you, the quality of the components they were able to put together for, you know, for that very pretty good amount of money, it rivals anything that you see coming out from other game companies right now, I think. I mean, the components are top-notch, and the game itself is really, really good. Mm-hmm. So just to go in real briefly into what the game's about, this game sort of feels a little bit like sort of Kingsburg in space.
Right.
So you're playing Kingsburg. It's a game that uses dice in a real interesting way to gain resources. The overall goal of this game is that you're trying to land colonies, which Cody calls Skittles. Because
they're Skittles.
They're little wooden, little Skittle-looking things there. Don't eat them.
No, don't.
But you're trying to land on the planet, and you're going to get victory points based upon how many colonies you have on the board on the planet, and also the different regions of the planet. You'll get an additional point if you control that region. You have more colonies than the opponents. And there's also some other cards, some technology cards, that if you own those, you'll get points for those and things like that. I mean, we're not talking about a huge point score here.
No.
A winning score might be 12 or something like that. And also the scoring is sort of a...
Live scoring.
It's kind of like Catan is what I was thinking of. Is that
it's more open than Catan.
That's true. But I mean, I was thinking like in Catan, you have like the longest road and the largest army mm-hmm. thing, that if that changes during the game, then those points will go up and down.
Yeah. Most of the time, you know how many points everyone has,
right?
Not counting any cards they might have in their hands.
Yeah, so it comes with like a little score chart thing that's that keeps track of the current condition of the score. But the way that you're going to get these colonies onto the board is that you have dice, which are your ships, And so you start off with three of them, and they're very colorful. And
you know, and to think you made fun of me for having little pyramids as ships.
These are dice, dude. That's different.
Okay.
Totally different. So you're going to roll your ships, your fleet of ships at the very beginning.
Your dice.
Your dice, yeah. And then based upon the numbers that are on there, you can go to different locations that are around the planet. So there are things like the shipyard, where if you put a pair of dice there, you can gain another ship the next turn. And you can have, a maximum of six dice. Yeah. Or you can go to get the resources that you need to be able to get your colonies prepared, which are fuel and ore. So there's spots on the board for those. And there's sort of different rules depending on what spot that you're on. Like, for example, the lunar mine, which is where you get ore, you have to put a die down that is equal to or greater than the highest die that's already there. So, I mean, a good kind of screw your neighbor part of it is that if it's your turn, you can plop down a six on there, and then you basically have locked out that whole location until your next turn.
Because they roll a six.
Unless they roll a six, yeah, because your die is going to stay on the board there. And so lots of other locations. There's some alien technology cards that allow you to break rules and do certain things. But you're going to place all your ships and gain all of your resources, and then it'll go on to the next player. So those dice remaining on the board is sort of the interesting interaction in the game, is that you can block people out and prevent them from going where they want to go. There's like three different ways to get colonies on the board. And then even after you get them on the board, some of those alien tech cards will allow you to like swap, move the things around. So, you know, someone who is in control of a region, if you move them, now they're not in control, they lose a point. So that goes back and forth. And then the game ends when one person places their last colony onto the board, and you check to see what the final condition of the score is, and you know, you pick your winner there. I love this game. I think this wasn't just a, we were very, very happy to have received a review copy, by the way. We did get a copy courtesy of Clever Mojo, and we thank you for
one of five for originally.
Yeah, I think they were doing
it's
five.
It's nice to think someone thinks so.
Yeah, we really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But we really enjoyed playing this game. And
oh my goodness.
I believe that after recording, we are going to play it again. Yes. Cody and I are getting it to the table again because we just like it so much. I liked it so much, I even wrote a Board Game Geek review on the site there, which I don't normally do. So go check out in Alien Frontiers and look for my review there. But we think this is an absolute buy.
Yeah, what is really neat is to speak on the art side of it. It's got kind of this retro sci-fi art thing going, but the thing I really like, being a graphic designer and being a fan of iconography in games, I'm the one guy that likes the Race for the Galaxy use of icons. I think every game should do that. I really like that, right?
No.
This game does not look like a first endeavor. I mean, this game is shiny and just everything is there for a purpose and is very clean and very nice. And props to whoever did the graphic design on it, because it looks fantastic. It looks like
it's kind of like sci-fi from the 50s or something.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of a look to it, would
yeah.
you say?
Yeah, but it's easy to, once you've heard the rules once, you can just kind of look at the location and the way they've done the iconography and kind of done up that space. It's enough to remind you of what it is.
Yeah.
It's well done in that regard. And something you don't see from a lot of first endeavors from new designers.
Just to clarify, I think this is actually their second game.
Oh.
They had another game that came out before, but
in second games.
but it wasn't with this level of production and everything. No. So I think it was called Ogre Castle was the game they put out before. But not to contradict you. Go ahead.
Right. But
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. And this has got me looking on that Kickstarter site, because had I known about this and known about the quality of game that would have come out, I would have been donating to this and really pushing this along, because this is a really special game. And I think when it hits, you're going to want to get a copy. And
yep.
We may do a bigger review or more discussion on it at a later time, but you're going to be hearing about this one.
Yep. And I think right now you can get, I think the only way that you can get the game right now, I'm not sure if the printing is done or not. I'm not sure where they are in that process, but on Clever Mojo's website, which I don't know exactly if it might be clevermojo.com or Clever Mojo Game. I'm not sure. So I won't say for sure. I will put it in our show notes on gameonpodcast.com to let you know where you can get it. But I think that's the main way that you can get the game right now. But we would highly recommend you go out and get it. And not just because we got a copy of it. I mean, don't turn your nose up at that.
Gotten copies of lots of games we don't like.
Exactly.
we'll give you the straight dope here.
Exactly. Boy, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't talk about those usually, do
nope.
we? No. So Alien Frontier is a great game. And so that's one of the ones that I've been playing. But other than that, I've just kind of been at the gym. I did get one piece of little modeling thing. I've been trying to get more War Machine stuff painted. Cody is actually organized, I don't think we mentioned this before, he's organized like a monthly War Machine game with our group of friends. We have been able to convince several of our friends to buy models and get started with this.
We have a small league. I think we have six people that have bought models.
Yeah, yeah, and wow. and have really, really liked the game and are really interested in it. So we were trying to put together a monthly game. Being mainly board gamers, it's hard for us to do that on a weekly basis, but once a month we'd like to just, you know, get our miniature on there and play.
Get a big like 6 hour session.
Yeah, just do a whole big afternoon of it. Yeah. So I have about five or six models that I have left to paint, including my new Vigilant Warjack that I just put together. And so I got the Vassal Mechanic painted.
The Tom Vassal Mechanic.
He's
come to fix your stuff.
Very nice. He's he was really tricky to paint actually because a lot of detail. I mean, the guy's got like this apron with a whole bunch of tools in it and everything, and so and a big wrench that he's holding. But
does he use it to shut the door?
I don't know.
I love you, Tom.
Yeah, we love you, Tom. But that'll be great to get him to the table to fix my warjacks when they get.
I expect
beat up
a
by
fully
yours.
Painted army. I'm not gonna. We have a couple of people in our group that just. Don't seem like they're in any hurry to paint, and that's got to end.
Yeah, no, I mean, you and I kind of committed that, you know, mm-hmm. you don't have to have all your shading and all your dipping or whatever done, but or your basing even, but at least have your base coating done on your model and have a painted set. So yeah. I'm not bringing anything to the table that's not painted next month. So that's basically what I've been doing.
11 times 1 is 11, it's true. 11 times 2 is 22. 11 times 3 is 33. 11 times 4 is 44. And 11 times 5 is 50.
So moving right along, let's talk about our main topic for the show, our big deal, if you will. Our top 2010 edition of our top 11 games.
Very exciting.
That's right, as of today.
Yes.
Because, you know, we change like the wind here, mm-hmm. but... we're going to be talking to you about our top 11. We did this for the first time last year, and like Cody mentioned in the intro, you know, some podcasts do top 10.
Yeah,
we do top
11. We go up one
more than that. Yeah,
that's right. And the thing to know about this is that we do not know each other's lists.
No, that's one of the fun things about this is we put them together separately, and you know, so you're hearing this, you'll hear our reactions firsthand here. Indeed. Because we have no idea. Because
I will tear his list apart and he will probably tear mine apart.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like we're coming to a convergence. We'll see how it goes here, but I think that if you looked at our list from last year, there was a lot of differences. And mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
All right.
Well, so we're just going to start off with, and we'll go back and forth, right?
Yes.
Let's start with, let me back up for a second. These are our top 11 games like of all time, like our absolute favorite games, but as of today. So, you know, this isn't like the best of the year or whatever, new stuff or whatever. This is, we look through all the games we've played, and these are the top 11 best ones. So, Cody, what's your number 11?
My number 11 game, last year, I believe it was Box of Golf.
Okay.
Didn't go to Origins, didn't get a chance to play it as per Origins ritual.
I didn't play it either, I'm sorry.
So it's fallen out.
Oh, it's out.
And this is an odd choice. It is a game that I had kind of left for dead. That came back with an expansion this year that revived it in my eyes, and that's Three Dragon Ante.
What?
one of probably my favorite trick-taking game out there.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
shocking.
Yeah, it's out there. But they released an expansion that kind of revived this dead brand. Mm-hmm. Three Dragon Ante being this, it's like a card game set in the D&D universe, right?
Yeah.
But on its own, it's a very fun card game. A lot of betting and trick-taking involved. And like I said, probably my favorite trick-taking game out there.
Wow.
Three Dragon Ante. And the caveat with that is with the new Emperor's Gambit expansion.
Okay.
It doubles the size of the deck and gives you a lot more options there. So that pushed it into the list.
Wow.
Yeah, I just rocked your world early.
Yeah,
there's more of that to come.
That's a shocker right there.
All right. What's your number 11?
This may be a shocker for you as well. Now, my number 11 last year was Cold War KGB versus CIA.
A fine game.
A fine game. Since last year, I have not played that one time.
Yep.
Still in my collection, and it is a great game, but it just hasn't made it to the table, so it falls out. This year, my number 11 game is Battlestar Galactica.
Wow.
Yeah. Which last year came in at number 6.
Ooh.
And so it's just fallen off for me a little bit. I still will never turn down a game of it. It's a great game, great cooperative with Traitor Element sort of a game. I sort of feel like the longevity of this game may be in question because it is linked to a television show that now has been off the air for 2 or 3 years now, right?
Oh, but it's a classic. It's a modern classic.
I agree with you, but I just think that for me, I'm finding less reasons to get it to the table. When the show was on, especially when the show was on, you really felt I felt more motivated to get it to the table because, you know, the mythology was still kind of going on. But maybe it's just because the new season of Caprica hasn't come out yet. But for me, it's a great game, but it's just dropped a little bit for me. So that's my number 11, Battlestar Galactica board game.
Not a good start for you.
All right.
I'll be honest.
Number 10.
My number 10 game is Long Shot, as I mentioned earlier.
That almost made my list. Yeah. It was in my the short list that, you know, before I got to the 11. Wow. Very good.
Yeah. This is a game that's come up. A lot of people categorize it as a party game. I still don't think it's a party game. It can hold a lot of people, hold 8 people.
But don't play it at a party. It's not going to work.
It just doesn't, I don't know. My definition of party is, you know, your party games, you know, your Taboo, your Scattergories.
You have the Andy Looney definition of party, don't you?
Hey, man, it's parties. But this is a really fun, rules light. It's a great gateway game you can bring in. And I think it's got a lot of replay value. You know, it's not so simple that you grow tired of it. There's a lot going on, and both the beginning player and the experienced player can have a lot of fun with it. So, Long Shot in the top 10.
Very nice. Okay. I can't argue with that one. It's a great game.
Thank you. It's on my list. Of course, it's a great game.
All right. Well, my number 10 game is the only game in my list that did not move at all. Okay. So, my number 10 last year and my number 10 this year is Kingsburg.
Mm-hmm.
A pseudo innovative game that has, you know, a dice rolling mechanic to, you know, get resources and just a lot of fun, cool fantasy theme. You know, we've talked about it a lot. So
might it get supplanted next year?
All right. Well, that's why I'll go ahead and bring that up now that, you know, I just ranted and raved for a few minutes earlier about Alien Frontiers, and that game is definitely in the same ballpark as Kingsburg. And I've only played Alien Frontiers once. Hope to play it a second time later on tonight. But I think there's a real good shot that may supplant Kingsburg as my dicing for resources game of choice.
If you're Jones theoring it.
If I'm Jones theoring it. But I really think this one might end up in my top 11 next year. So don't quote me on it, but, you know, we'll see. So that one gets an honorable mention, you know. There you go. So Kingsburg is number 10. What about you? You're number 9. Yes.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Alien Frontiers.
Oh, no. Really?
Alien Frontiers.
No, I believe that he's showing me the piece of paper. Yes. Yeah.
For all you watching at home. Uh-huh. That might seem hasty, because Kingsburg was high on my list last year. 3 or 4, I think.
Yeah.
It has dropped out.
Oh, my.
I've played it a lot more, and I don't know.
You've played it a lot more than I have. You play with your family a lot, don't
yeah.
you?
It's still a good game. I still enjoy playing it. But it was like playing Alien Frontiers, and yes, I've only played it once. This might be hasty. It kind of opened my eyes to where this genre can go, where this mechanic can really go, because this seems like the next logical step in the Kingsburg mechanic, and it's almost a totally different game. It's just deeper, but you still have that kind of fun and the luck mechanic that's in Kingsburg.
It's much more interactive, mm-hmm. I think, than Kingsburg, because right. Kingsburg, all the building part of it is very separate. There's no interaction in the building at all. It's just whatever choices you make.
Right. Yeah. It's the only interaction in Kingsburg is blocking people, essentially. You know, right. You're just kind of building on your own track. This is very fluid. You see what everyone else is doing. You can take steps to, you know, misdirect them and mess them up more so than you can in Kingsburg. And I'm just really enchanted by this game. If you didn't catch it earlier, so it is number 9 on my list.
Wow.
So take your honorable mention.
Okay.
And get out.
Okay.
What's your number?
See, I thought you were going to dog me for the honorable mention and say, oh, you've only played it once, John. How can you put it in your top? Yeah. Okay.
Apparently I have a raspy Jersey voice.
You do. Okay. My number 9 this year is a new one.
Oh, boy.
That's only gotten recently to the table, and that is Innovation.
Almost made the list.
Okay. And that one is one I've played it enough times there that I can really tell that it's in that magical sweet spot for me of it's a shorter game, but it's got a lot of depth to it. I put this in the same category as Dominion as far as the way it feels when I play it. Like, you know, Dominion is a short game, shorter game that has the sort of a rich play experience, even though it's shorter. I feel like Innovation is in the same sort of kind of slot there. So
it's a good game.
Yeah. So, and you know, this one I think is going to probably stay in my top 10 or top 11 for a long time.
It'll probably It will probably make my top 11 next year.
All right, so number 9 was innovation. What was your number 8?
Number 8 was my number 2 last year, and that's The Fury of Dracula.
Oh, okay.
And it's dropping fast.
Dropping fast,
It hung on barely. It probably will not hang on next year.
Okay.
I still like the game.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I have gone on quite the losing streak as Dracula lately. Just a remarkable losing streak,
mm-hmm.
where the hunters are getting newspaper reports turn 2. This has happened like 3 games in a row.
It seems hard for Dracula to win when you get that going on.
Yeah, you're just stuck. And I'm just finding that I'm bringing other games to the table. Mm-hmm. It's Fury of Dracula is now like a third or fourth option. It's still a fun game. It's still on my list because I like it, but it's vulnerable right now, I think. Still, mm-hmm. still a fine game. If you haven't played it, play it tonight. It'll be a fun game, but it's barely holding on for me.
See, this almost brings up a little discussion of like gaming longevity. You know, I think one of the things that happens to us, especially as podcasters, because we play a lot of games, we review a lot of games, is that we don't have too many games in our collection that get to the table a ton. You know, mm-hmm. only really our very favorites, and even sometimes our very favorites don't get to the table 6, 10, 20 times. You know,
right.
And so that's something that I think as reviewers we don't get a chance to mention a lot, is what kind of staying power a game has. And you know, so that really kind of shows me that since that one dropped so far, that you know, maybe it's a good game, but it doesn't have quite the staying power of other games. Maybe.
I mean, I'm all for. You know, that's one of kind of the, I guess you could say, the downsides of reviewing. You know, John and I meet every week, but we're rarely playing the same game more than once. You know,
right.
'Cause we want to play new stuff to get it out for you guys. You know, I wouldn't mind just playing the same game a couple times a month and just, you know, getting it into the rotation, getting the habit of the game. I don't know. It's still a good game. We'll see. If it gets to the table more, yeah, it might shoot up in the rankings. But I've got some higher than that maybe I haven't played in the same amount of time.
Okay, so that was your number 8.
That was my number. What's your number 8?
My number 8 was my number 7 last year, and that is Stone Age.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Have you played that again since?
I have not.
Okay.
But, you know, and it's one of those deals where it's just, again, being podcasters and everything, it's hard to get things multiple times to the table. But I know even having not played it that, the way I kind of thought about it was, is that when I think about mechanics, you know, like we talked about last show, the worker placement mechanic, I think this is my favorite of the worker placement games, you know, because I like the fact that you can place your workers on the board there to get the resources, and then you have that kind of cool random element with the dice where...
You just like the leather dice cup.
The smelly leather dice cup is a very alluring, but no, it's just the fact that you can then... You're giving yourself a better shot at getting good resources, but there's no guarantee of it. And that's kind of cool to have that little random element to it. Great production values. It's an all-around just a great game, so... Stone Age, my number 8.
All right.
Number 7.
My number 7 game is, it's probably as high as it is on potential alone. Mm. I've only played this game once, but I really like it, and I think I will like it in the future, and that's Rune Wars.
Okay.
This is one where we played it. I really enjoyed it, but because of its length and just, it's almost an event game in and of itself, it's hard to schedule, and we just have not got to the table, but... I really liked it, and I'm always kind of jonesing to play it.
Yeah,
and I think it takes mechanics from Twilight Imperium, which is an even longer game, and distills it down, mixes in some other elements, and makes for a really nice kind of hybrid game, like I talked about last episode, that is really appealing to me and that I really want to get to the table more.
Yeah. You know, that one actually was also on my short list. Didn't quite make the big list, but I like that one a lot too. I mean, it really does have one of my favorite mechanics, that action card kind of roll mechanic. I think that's very fun.
So number 7, Rune Wars.
All right, my number 7 is a game that I had not played at all last year at the time we did the top 11, and now I've had a chance to play one game in person and two games by email.
Mm, here it is.
And that is Diplomacy. And so we talked, you know, last year after we did our Day of Diplomacy about that game and this just great negotiation, you know, backstabbing, fun, you know, screw your neighbor kind of a game. And you know, we have our Day of Diplomacy coming up again on, you know, beginning of next month, right?
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
Yeah, just a couple of weeks. And I've had a great time also playing this by email, which is a whole different sort of experience because you've got... You know, I know some of the people that are in the game, like in person, but some of them I don't. And so you can just do a lot of different sort of stuff via email. And I got an email today, this long chain of emails where there's been a lot of backstabbing going on. And there's one guy who's really ticked off. He's either really ticked off or he's just being sarcastic, but he's writing all in bold, you know, and just seems to be really upset right now. So I think it's just really funny. So yeah, it's a great game. We've talked about it a ton. Diplomacy.
This was on my short list, but then I realized I've never actually played it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you were the moderator last year.
Okay. It looked cool, and I'm going to play this time. So
okay.
Diplomacy. That's a solid number 7. I can get behind that.
Thank you. Number 6?
This may be an odd number 6.
Box of Golf.
And if you know, a fine game, not that fine game. I may get a little flack for this.
Okay.
Time's Up Title Recall, number 6.
Number 6. Wow.
I can not list many more games that I have as much fun, just pure fun playing than I do than this one.
Wow.
I really like party games. This is the granddaddy of them all. And I have a blast every time I play it no matter who I play it with. Mm-hmm. And on just the fun value alone, it gets the number 6 ranking for me.
Wow. That's kind of high.
It's high.
That's kind of high. And very interesting, seeing as my tops, my number 6 is Time's Up Title Recall.
Oh, there it is! Ding, 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 ding.
No, I can't agree with you more. That's and last year I had Wits and Wagers on my 11 list. It's sort of my party game, you know. But Time's Up Title Recall is hands down the best party game that's out there right now.
I was wondering if we were going to get a match.
Yeah, so it's a great game. I'm like Cody. I've never played an unsuccessful game of this as far as people having a good time, and I love it because it's usually a game where people start off not getting it or not liking it, and all it takes is getting through that first round and then everybody's having a great time.
The last game I played with it was with some people in the local group, maybe not the most pop culturally savvy folks, right?
Uh-huh.
And one of the titles was Gone with the Wind, the book, the movie, and the person giving it knew what it was. Person receiving it didn't know much about it, so the person's like, Scarlett O'Hara, you know, Rhett Butler, Southern Story, big movie. And they're just okay. Shaking their head, just dead, like, huh? Scarlett, a what?
Mississippi Burning?
That was Atlanta, sir.
Oh, what?
It was Atlanta that burned.
No, there's a movie called Mississippi Burning.
Oh, that's
nice.
That's come on now. Time's Up Title Recall. Okay.
Very well done. No,
The Wind Done Gone.
The Wind Done Gone. Okay. Number 5, go ahead.
Number 5 is the same number 5 I had last year, and that is Descent.
Journey
to the Dark, the same. I don't think I've played this since our last review, but it's a testament to its staying power, because again, like Rune Wars, it's a hard one to get to the table. But you know, I for example, I just watched Scott Nicholson's latest Board Games with Scott, where he talks about dungeon crawls.
Yeah, it was a good episode.
Great episode.
Yeah, go check it out.
And just seeing, you know, the Descent dice and the cards and the stuff in action, it just, you know, it's like my hair kind of stood up on end. Like, I'm like, ooh. I don't get to I don't get this to the table enough. I got all
podcasting.
Excited.
But it's funny that you haven't played the game, but you've painted all the miniatures in the last year.
I have a fully painted set of Descent Journeys in the Dark that John has played with, but I haven't.
That's true, yeah.
But, you know, playing in a weekly RPG session, it's sometimes hard to justify it, A, being in my collection, and B, getting it to the table. It's like, yeah. Well, we play D&D. Why do we need this?
Sure.
This needs to get to the table more. I still believe it is a top 5 game, in my opinion, and it's one of the best that Fantasy Flight's put out. So
awesome.
Descent Journeys in the Dark.
Number 5. I completely agree with you, which is why my number 5 is Descent.
There it
is. Journeys in the Dark.
We're going to run the table.
I know. Wow. And yeah, look, you know, listeners, we seriously did not see these lists ahead of time. Yeah, everything you said there. I mean, this actually was my number 1 game a couple of years ago before we were even doing, you know, top 11. And it's dropped a little bit just because I just don't get it at the table enough. I feel like my absolute top games need to be, you know, hopefully games that I'm getting to the table more often. But it's a great game, and I would really like to play more with the Road to Legend expansion or the Sea of Blood expansion. I have both of them, and I haven't been able. It's just a time commitment thing, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, would you rather play this or an RPG, like you know, and or you know, would you rather play
a couple of games?
Yeah, it's hard to get buy-in from people to play a campaign of this, especially if you have people that are RPGers, you know, that would rather just be doing that than playing a board game. But,
so your ranking is based on the base game alone, yeah?
Yes.
Same with me.
Yep,
I don't really know much about the expansion.
We've played like like one session with the Road to Legend expansion. It seemed pretty cool, but it was still a little clunky because we were trying to get used to it. It's on my list of, you know, I've got a long list of things I'd love to get to the table that I'm not sure ever will, but yeah, hands down one of the best games I've played in the last few years. So number five, Descent.
I'm going to let you do your number four first, see if we can break up the string.
Okay. All right. Well, my number four, I know this isn't going to match, okay. But my number four is Small World.
Really? No, that's not going to match.
No, I didn't think so. And this is a game, actually was a game of the year in the Dice Tower Gaming Awards for 2009. Yeah, there, I'm just saying. So we're on the committee. So
I didn't vote for it.
Okay, well, and I love the fact that the reason why I like this game so much, it even has less to do with the gameplay as it's just so accessible for new people, and that it's easy to teach. For me, that's just a huge thing with games is that I really need games that are easy to teach because I teach games all the time. And so I hate stuff where I'm either I can't remember the rules and I have to keep looking in the rule book, or it's just long and convoluted and it takes a long time to explain. This game, it's so intuitive. You know, here's your stack of elves, you know, here's how you conquer. It's two cardboard plus, you know, two plus the number of cardboard that's on the square. It's on the region. It's just really easy. Yeah, I love that it's customizable to 2 to 5 players with the two double-sided boards. And the expansions that have come out, I haven't played with any of those expansions, but they look like they're pretty fun. And, I think it's a great game. It's one that I can very easily get to the table, and everybody that I bring it out for seems to think it's pretty cool.
You know, Candyland's easy to teach.
Oh, gosh. Really? You're really going to try to compare it to Candyland?
I'm just saying. Number four?
Oh, gosh. Number four.
That's a high rating.
It is. And actually, it jumped a few because it was... Oh, it wasn't even on my list last year. I'm looking here. Yeah, I'm surprised.
You had it right last year. Number four.
All right. What was your number four?
I can't think of a better game to have at number four than Tichu,
oh.
Requiring four players. True. Really enjoy this game. It's at first I thought it was a trick-taking game. It feels like one, but it's the people on BGG call it, a ladder style game?
Yeah. Something like that. Ladder, like Great Dumb Moody or something.
Yeah,
like that.
So... It's a different vein than Three Dragon Ante for me, but this is the game I wish Euchre was, you know, because Euchre is really big here in Indiana and in the Midwest, and I hate that game. I hate Euchre. But this is a really nice partner game you can play. The tacked on Chinese theme's a bit, it's kind of stupid, but it is a really neat game that I'd like to get a Tichu club, you know, get a couple other couples that play Tichu, and you know. What?
Make some tea.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can play Small World while we're playing Tichu.
Okay.
Number four is Tichu, sir.
All right. Well, I obviously don't feel the same way that you do about Tichu because my number three is Tichu.
I thought it was going to be your number four.
So. No. It's, okay. Ditto what Cody says there. It's an absolutely great game. Small box, small price. Extremely great strategic and tactical gameplay.
Deep as the ocean.
Yeah, it's like when you start explaining it to people, they're kind of like, what the heck are you talking about? All it takes is one round, and then people get the hang of it.
It's like explaining any card game, you know, Rummy, and people are like, what?
Yeah, but this one had great success with it. I mean, the only thing that's kind of a downside to it is the fact that you really need four players to play with, you know. But that's true for any kind of partnership game. But if you can ever get four people to the table, this is something I would suggest almost all the time. So it's one of those games where after playing, I feel like, I could have played that better, you know, and I want another shot at it so I can play it better. There's a lot of games that I play where it's like, I was terrible at that game. I don't even want to try it again because I'll probably be terrible the next time. This game, it's almost like golf to me. It's like I go out on the golf course. I'm a terrible golfer, but I hit well enough that I can play, and I usually have one or two really good shots, you know, and that's enough for me to think, I can maybe play this game and I'll come back and do it again. Mm-hmm. It's like with Tichu, I'll screw up and lose a bunch of rounds. Then I'll put that one bomb down at just the right time, or I'll play just the dragon at just the right time, and I'll be like, oh, I think I could play this game. So
There's a Tichu app.
For the iPhone?
Yes.
Not for the Android.
You lose again.
We've been having a little debate over the, you know, iPhone versus Android apps for games. iPhone is definitely winning that one so far.
Come on over anytime.
No, I've only had my phone for a few months. My Android phone. So number three, Tichu.
Okay, so my number three is the one you can ridicule me about.
Okay.
Because this one has moved up in my rankings, and that's Talisman.
Oh.
With all of the current
expansions.
Wasn't that
expansion. 8 or 9 last year for you? Or 10 or something? Yes. Oh, no.
The expansions that, shut up, that Fantasy Flight Games has put out. Yes, it's still a luck fest. To be tame, but it is a game where it's nostalgia value and just pure fun. It is the Beer and Pretzels adventure game, and the expansions make it that much better. I love it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, you know.
Talisman with all expansions. That's Reaper, Dungeon, Frostmarch, Highland, and Scrying Pool coming out soon.
Thank you, Fantasy Flight Representative.
MyriadGames.com to pre-order.
All right, well, I'll give you a pass on that one since, you know.
Since it's a good game.
Well, and I had Small World, so.
Yeah. What's your number two?
All right, my number two, which probably contradicts what I just said a few minutes ago, is 1960, The Making of the President, which was my number two last year because, and I've played that, I think, one time in the last year. I played with your wife, mm-hmm. and did I lose? I lost, but just barely. It was very close. If you know me from the show here, I'm a huge history buff. I love a presidential history, especially. This game has just great gameplay. Now, you know, those of you who played Twilight Struggle will argue with me and say that Twilight Struggle is a better game. And I may not disagree with you as far as gameplay goes, but as far as just the theme and the way it's integrated and all the mechanics, I just love, love, love this game. And I will play it at any time. But I can't play with Cody because he doesn't like it. But
hey, after this, do you want to play 1960?
No, I want to play Alien Frontiers.
No, I don't want to play 1960.
Okay. Well, I don't have it with me.
It was a trap.
Oh, dang it. Thank you, Akbar. But yeah, so this one stayed put for this year. It's definitely one of my absolute favorites, 1960. You're number two, sir.
All right, the Silver Medalist.
The Silver Medalist.
As it were, is Dominion.
Dominion.
And this doesn't include Prosperity thrown into the mix because I've only played that once.
Okay.
But this is Dominion with Intrigue, Seaside, Alchemy. It's easily the best deck building game out there. It's got so many different combinations. It's still thriving. Alchemy is a little, Prosperity is a little, but I think in a year or so I may not feel as strongly about it as I do, but you can get this to the table, and each game you'll approach with a different strategy and different tactics, and it's a very smartly designed game. It's a quick game, and, you know, like John mentioned earlier, if your strategy is really terrible, well, the damage doesn't last long. You can pick up and start a new game later. So Dominion, everything's been said about it. It's my number two game with everything up to Prosperity.
Okay. So now it's time for the gold medalist, right?
Yep. I know your gold medalist.
And I know what yours is too. Okay. At least I think I do. All right. So my gold medalist, a repeat performer from last year, is Dominion.
Yep.
And I would go ahead and just include all of the expansions. I played played Prosperity two or three times now. And I think it's actually a really good expansion. It's big. I mean, as far as the money and everything goes, but when I think about my favorite game, I think of it in terms of kind of, I think I mentioned this last year, what BGG talks about, Board Game Geek. They have, when they have their rankings of their games, they give like a little description for what a 1 means and what a 10 means, that kind of stuff. And number 10, I don't know exactly what the exact wording is, but more or less it's, I love this game and think that I always will love this game and I will never turn down a game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I feel about Dominion, is that Cody and I, we usually have a conversation via text message or something before I come over for gaming once a week, and we'll say, hey, what do you want to play? And with, you know, Dominion's always on my list of things of, you know, you want to play that? Sure. I might be kind of moody about certain games, like, I don't really feel like getting out Rune Wars. I'm not really sure if I feel like playing Catan or whatever, but Dominion is always something that if it's offered, absolutely I'll play Dominion, sure. And so, you know, it's easy to teach. Like Cody said, everything's been said about it before, but it continues to be my favorite game. So Dominion, the gold medalist for John.
That's a solid number one.
Yeah. Number one. We'll see what happens in a year. The whole longevity thing, I'm kind of curious about it now. So yeah. We'll see what happens next year. But
after the 5 expansions they put out between now and next year.
Right, yeah. But hey, if that Miniatures Combat expansion comes out, it's going to stay at top.
They're going to have like an Exilis type of thing. You know, there's going to be a computer app for it.
Right.
It's going to adjudicate everything.
All right, well, tell us what Euro games at your top list.
The top of my list is Heroes of Grexis. No, I'm just kidding. That's it is not nice. Battlestar Galactica,
yes, of course.
A repeat from with Pegasus expansion.
Okay.
This
is a little surprising to me, actually.
Well, I'll explain it. I like it with the right group of people. I'm kind of tired of teaching this game, I'll be completely honest.
Okay.
I really want to play with like the same group of people kind of over and over. I played this game with some kind of jerky people, but it mixes a lot of elements I like. It's that cooperative game with the traitor element. It's got some, you know, werewolf paranoia in there. It's, at its core, a really good kind of little strategy game, you know, trying to figure things out. And as I was putting my list together, it didn't start at the top. I was like, well, it was my top last year, but I couldn't find anything in my list that would unseat it. Like, I really like BSG. You know, if I had the means to, I would never turn down a game of it. I really like it. And the Pegasus expansion, New Caprica I'm a little iffy on, but everything else I really like about it, and I think adds just the next level of that game. And I think it's going to have a long life. I think it'll has a longer life than you think it might.
Okay.
So, yeah, BSG with the Pegasus expansion is my gold medalist, the top of my list for 2010.
Wow, so we kept our same top games. Huh?
Yeah.
Was your number two the same?
No. My number two is Fury of Dracula.
Oh, Fury of Dracula. Sure, that's right.
It dropped to 8.
Okay. Now, I want to make one mention of one other game that was in my top 3 last year that fell completely off the list.
What do you got?
And that is HeroScape.
Yeah, that was like number 6 on mine.
Yeah. And the reason is not because it's not a good game, because it really is. And actually, as my son is getting a little older, he's 7 now, this is one that I think is going to come out a lot more, because he'll be able to play with the more advanced rules, and you know, he loves that kind of stuff anyway. But the main reason why it's fallen off the list is because of War Machine.
Yeah.
Is because that is a kind of become the, you know, the one collectible, it's not really collectible, you know, the one hobby miniatures game that we're playing right now. And I like it so much, and I'm so invested in it now that HeroScape just doesn't get to the table very much.
I completely agree.
But
it's a fine game.
It is a fine game, but it had to fall out this year. So, golf clap for HeroScape.
Yeah, well done. Yeah. Well done. Rest in peace.
All right, so that's the top 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we...
Small world, huh?
Yeah, come on.
Okay.
Come on, not that bad.
We can't all play good games.
we can't all play Talisman.
Hey, a fine game.
It's okay.
Been through 4 editions already, 4.5 really.
Okay, well, they need to stop.
But speaking of good games, the game Those Pesky Humans from Minion Games, kind of a new startup company.
Oh,
and,
yeah?
Well, let's talk about it.
Review time?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
The way you look into the night, 'cause you're a man.
All right, so it's review time. We're going to be talking about Those Pesky Humans from Minion Games. And we were nice enough to get a review copy of this game from Minion Games. Thank you, Minion Games.
Thanks.
Yeah. And this is a dungeon crawling game. And boy, have we played a lot of dungeon crawl games in our time.
Indeed.
We played Descent. We played, we played Castle Ravenloft recently. Mm-hmm. You just played Dungeon Quest for the first
terrible time
a couple of days ago, didn't you?
As much as I talk about Talisman being a luck fest, that game is... overly a luck fest when you can die in like the second room through no fault of your own.
Yeah, not fun. Huh?
Castle Ravenloft?
Yeah, I just mentioned that.
No, did you?
Good lord.
What about Castle Ravenloft?
A lot of Starburst over there. It's Sorry. Going to your head.
Drugs.
Oh, yeah. Well, Castle Ravenloft is a good one. Yeah. Anyway, so we played a lot of dungeon crawl games. And so, you know, it's a popular genre, and there's lots of good things about those sort of games. You know, is there really room for another one in the big pile here? And I think that those Pesky Humans actually fills a surprising little niche in this sort of a genre.
I would agree with
game.
You.
So the game comes with a lot of cardboard, and that's really the main thing. There's not any miniatures in this game. You don't get any little plastic pieces to play with. The best that you're going to do is that for like the doors in the dungeon, you have little standees that they go on, and pretty much all of the pieces in the game are cardboard stand-ups for your monsters and also for your heroes. So the game scales pretty well from 2 players up to, what is it, 4, 6, something like that? Yeah, I don't know.
So check that rule book in front of you.
Sorry, yeah. It doesn't say in the rule book. Nicely done.
I think it is optimally designed for 2, can play more.
Yeah, box says up to 4. So plays in about 90 minutes.
He's a podcasting professional.
I sure am. Yeah.
GameOnPodcast@gmail.com.
I spent all that time going to, putting together my top 11.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the game is the game board is a series of hexes, big hexes, and they're double sided.
Did you show up today?
I'm so sorry. Pass me a Starburst. And so it's all these large hexes. So the board is configurable every time.
Modular, you might say.
Yeah, it can look different every time. And one player is going to play the minion overlord or the dungeon overlord or something, whatever the normal
the overlord,
term is.
Yeah.
And that's going to be represented by this big kind of ogre character who's sort of in his lair there. And then he's going to be able to kind of spawn minions onto the board during his turn. And then the other player or players will control one or more of these heroes that are going in. I mean, have you heard this before? I've kind of heard this a few times. Yeah, this kind of a premise. But And what you're trying to do is dungeon adventurers are going into this dungeon and they're trying to get three legendary gems. And so they're going to be searching around in this dungeon. Each one of these large hexes is going to have some sort of a resource token in it, one per hex. And they're going to be going in and trying to look at those and see, you know, is it a legendary gem? Is it some kind of a weapon or a shield or something? Or is it an encounter with a bad guy? Something like that. So they're going to be going through the dungeon trying to get all of those legendary gems and then get back to the starting hex and out the door. So without dying. And that's the main goal for the adventurers, the main goal for the minion overlord guy. What's his name again? Hold on a second. Monster Lord. He's called the Monster Lord.
Duh.
Yeah. So the Monster Lord's job is going to be to kill all the adventurers. So that's pretty easy. And the game is kind of mediated by these cards. You're going to have a movement value. Every one of the heroes has like a player card. You know, is going to have a certain number of stats on it for movement and for attack and defense and things like that.
You hear that, Cadwallon, City of Thieves?
Yeah, they're all a little bit different. And then you're going to have a hand of cards. You'll have a hand of cards, and the Monster Lord is also going to have a hand of cards. And this is sort of how the game is, the main way that the game is played and the variety in the game is that you can play cards during combat that are going to modify things. And it's almost kind of a back and forth mechanic of that. When you get into a combat situation, you're next to a bad guy, you know, you play a card and the Monster Lord will play a card and you sort of add things up.
A little bit of a take that.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. And you might, that happens a lot where, you know, I'm going to play this awesome sword, and that means I can get a +1, blah, blah, blah. And you know, then the Monster Lord will say, well, if you're going to play that, then I'm going to play this, you know.
Kind of like Munchkin a little bit, but better.
A little bit, yeah. You know, that's the basics of the game. I'm not going to go real deeply into the mechanics because, hey, it's a dungeon crawl. It's really not that hard to figure out. You're going to move your guys around. You're going to use some of your action points to turn over the little resource tokens, and if there's an encounter, then you might spawn a particular kind of monster, and there are these cool little stand-up pictures of the monsters. The artwork in the game is kind of cool. It's very cartoony,
yeah.
And you know, but and there's some sort of funny stuff in the cards, but it's not over the top. It's not one of those things where you know, it's not like Munchkin where, you know, you have to have, you know, some
we
sort
are
of,
hammering Munchkin tonight.
Well, yes.
I learned it from you, Dad.
Well, you know, you don't have to know a bunch of in jokes in the RPG world for these to be amusing. You know, I mean, yeah. The artwork is kind of fun, and but it's not too over the top.
Like it all works for filling the niche that this game you can see is trying to fill.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, your beer and pretzels dungeon crawl game.
Exactly. And, you know, so, you know, that's going to be basically what's going to happen. The Monster Lord has got some special abilities as far as it takes a lot to kill him. And, you know, you can spawn little minions that are going to kind of go out from where he's at. And it's really, I think, a lot of fun. So, you know, there's a lot of little variety in the modular board and in the placement of those resource tokens, because it's the Monster Lord who places the resource tokens.
I believe it's also the Monster Lord who sets up the board.
I think you're right. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's his dungeon. So.
That's right.
And so it's kind of cool. When we were playing the game, you know, Cody's kind of moving around. I played the Monster Lord, and he's kind of moving around going, it was kind of a Princess Bride thing. Mm-hmm. You know, well, could I take the wine in front of you? He's like, well, would he have put the legendary gem really close to him in the dungeon, or would he put it far from the door or close to the door? And that made it kind of fun. And, you know, there's little items you can pick up that will give you bonuses and stuff like that. So, you know, I think this game is really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it fills a specific niche because you have games like Descent that are very meaty and they're very long and they require a big time commitment. You know, you have Dungeons and Dragons, you know, if you're going, you know, even farther in an RPG direction, which requires an extremely large time commitment and committing a lot of rules. Yeah. You know, and then you have your kind of lighter dungeon crawl games like Cutthroat Caverns and things like that, you know, but that's almost a different kind of animal.
Yeah.
So I think this really fits a niche of like a light 1 hour or less little dungeon romp, you know, and it's not like Dungeon Twister to quote another one that which is more like a game of chess than anything else. You know, that's a very sort of strategic game. This game is just very light, very fun. Play cards back and forth, and you know,
it's meant to be a tongue in cheek. not to overuse it, but a beer and pretzels dungeon crawl. You know, it's like, hey, we got an hour, let's bust out those pesky humans.
Right. And there are dice involved. There's, you know, dice to roll for combat. The cards I was mentioning are, you know, for modifiers and that kind of stuff. But yeah, beer and pretzels to be sure. But I think it's real quality. The only knock against it, component-wise, and it's the same knock I think has been against a couple of different Minion Games games, is that the cards are
great.
They're really bad quality, you know, and they look when you open up the pack like they're going to be really nice, but they almost kind of disintegrate in your hand. So I would recommend sleeving them if you get this game. But we would recommend that you get this game.
I would.
It's a really, really good one. It's really well put together. The rule book isn't fantastic, but it'll get, you know, a couple reads through it. It'll give you everything you need to know.
I would say go and get it. I personally am excited to see kind of, you know, if it catches fire and they do a new edition of it. Or like a revised edition, you know, with kind of a better rule book and better components.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for miniatures here, but the cards are pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah.
But they've got the right idea, which is the most important thing, because you can have a lavish game with just these state-of-the-art components and crappy gameplay, Cadwall and City of Thieves.
Hammering on that one, too.
Yeah,
huh?
I know. Yeah. I picked my targets tonight.
Oh, hey, one other thing that I forgot to mention about the setup is that there are these doors in all the different areas.
Oh, yeah, this
that
is
are,
cool.
That are set up by the Monster Lord, and they're little cardboard standees that go in the plastic things. You don't know what kind of door it is unless you lift up the door. And it's printed on the very bottom, the part that goes in the plastic stand, so you wouldn't ordinarily see it. But you'll lift it up, and it'll either say door, it'll say a locked door, or it'll say trap door. And so, you know, the Monster Lord, again, is in control of where these things go. And locked doors just take an additional number of movement points to be able to move through. Trap doors, of course, will cause you damage if you go through those. So the Monster Lord can really be strategic as to, you know, where am I going to put the gems and what kind of doors am I going to put around to sort of protect those things. And, you know, that makes it kind of fun. But still very light, very beer and pretzels.
Yeah,
so
check it out. Minion Games, Those Pesky Humans.
Yep.
All right, well, you've heard what we've had to say. And we are...
For a long time. If you're still with us, thanks.
Too long. The two of you that are still there. But we have some nice emails here at the Game On Inbox.
Wonderful. And Cody's actually printed off. I don't think we mentioned this. We should go ahead and mention it.
Sure.
If the show sounds a little bit different to you, we're actually recording at Cody's place.
It's great.
The Game On Studios is usually at my place, but we've moved the Game On Studios temporarily to see what it's going to sound like. So.
I'm sitting in a very comfortable chair.
Yeah.
Nice, well-lit gaming room. It's fantastic.
It's nice. We're surrounded by all of Cody's cool posters and stuff. We got the Catan, Indiana, and Ohio poster in front of us.
That I tried for years to get, finally, through your efforts and my father-in-law efforts.
Yeah, I got a giant red dragon next to me here. Yep. Very nice. So.
Very nice.
Anyway, so Cody's printed out all of the emails that we've gotten that we're going to be reading, and so we're just kind of pulling them off the stack here, and we're going to read them. So go ahead, Cody. Give us our first email from the Game On Inbox.
Thanks. Our first email is from James Howlett. He says, hey guys, love the podcast. Heard about it from another podcast.
Thanks, James.
I'm still catching up. I'm listening to episode 22 now.
Oh, that was a great one. That was the episode that we did on... Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't remember. We did 10 episodes ago. He says, you guys talk about Wits and Wagers a lot. Played an older game called Outwages? And I'm not
like the Elmer Fudd version of
Outwages. It's still gambling and trivia, but it works a little different. Someone gets a category, and everyone bets on whether or not that person will know the answer.
Huh?
That sounds cool.
That does sound cool.
Check it out if you can find it. My family likes it better than Wits and Wagers.
Oh, we will have to definitely check that one out.
I like that.
Yeah, sounds cool.
Yeah, I mean, you could get some people mad.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I think you're kind of dumb. Yeah.
You won't know jack about that.
Yeah, sounds cool. All right, well, thanks for the email, James.
Pick out an email.
All right, here you go. I'm going to pull that off the stack.
Yeah,
you got
to rustle it there.
All right, here you go. Nice. All right, says, this one is from Jeff Hastings. Says, hey, guys.
Hi, Jeff.
Just listen to your podcast reviews of Innovation and Heroes of Graxia. I'm really looking forward to Innovation, just waiting for it to release a bit wider than ordering it from the Osmati website. And he says he thinks he'll get probably a better deal. On Heroes of Graxia, I've only played once myself, and I think your knock on it for the huge number of attack and defense values were fair. Thank you.
Thanks.
That's the same
thought. I like it when people tell us we're right.
I know. I like that. That's the same thought we had on it, even in a two-player game. I just thought I would mention that what we plan to try in our next play, in case you might like to do the same. We're going to take some of the small dry erase boards from Wits and Wagers or Say Anything, along with a few of those markers, and distribute them to each player. That way, We'll each have a running tally of our own attack, defense, and gold from units as a running total that we can just update with the new cards on each turn instead of counting everything again and again. It should be just as easy to deduct only lost units, etc. I'm hoping this helps out because I do like many of the features of the game. We joked that the expansion would be a set of miniature color matching calculators.
It'd serve about as much purpose as the
miniatures. Yeah. My thoughts with a simple dry erase note might be something like this. And he writes down, like, you know, 44 ATK, 39 DEF, 8 gold, and you know, had put some variables in there. So
it's a good idea.
I think it's a real good idea.
Yeah, but it's kind of, if you have to do that, there's something wrong on a design standpoint, you know?
Well, you got to keep a score pad for Tichu, so that's what
this
that's
is
what
a little different.
It might not be that different.
It's a good idea. The game still is trash.
We're going to try it again, and we're going to use those boards.
Are we now? Okay, our next email.
All right, thanks, Jeff.
Ah, I'm glad I got this one. This is from Mike Hustlebus. here, you take it.
No, you got to read it.
It looks like Hustlebus.
Okay, we apologize for we have a standing apology for any names that we misspell there or mispronounce.
Hustlebus.
Mike. Mike wrote us an email.
The Hustlebus sounds like a. Anyway, hey guys, I wanted to thank you for pointing out Action Castle. Thank me for pointing out Action Castle. I picked it up myself and have really enjoyed playing it. Rather than run it in person, I ran it online via comments on a Google Reader thread, allowing people to comment whenever they felt like it. Good idea. Hmm. It took a long time, but it was definitely worth it. I recommend Spooky Manor, which is the third adventure in the series, over Action Castle, since Spooky Manor has alternate endings depending on what players do. It is a little more detailed.
Okay.
It was a huge hit, even with my non-gaming friends. It led me to try and run a Call of Cthulhu game in disguise, but that was a mistake. Back to the Parsley system for me. Can you imagine? You are greeted by an elder one. Exits are in mouth.
Yes. Is there a command for die?
Really, though, I'm just using that topic of conversation as an excuse. So I can tell you how great your podcast is. Oh, you guys know what you're doing? We really don't.
he probably thinks a little less great now that he's watched you butcher his name.
I'm sorry, Mike. That's right. I'm a Jones. I don't have to think about these things.
That's true.
You guys know what you're doing. Whatever you're talking about, you guys have a good back and forth going that keeps the topic interesting.
Thanks.
I don't know if you guys edit yourself down to get just the funniest and most focused parts or what, but it certainly seems like you must. John does all that.
Yeah. We actually don't edit very much at all. We edit when we totally screw something up, but although we're not apparently editing out, you know, Cody butchering the name. So.
Sorry.
But you know, we actually don't really do that much editing as far as content and stuff. We just kind of talk. So.
Yeah, I let John do all the work. And then finally, he says, "Thanks for the heads up on Myriad Games. I just started subscribing to their podcast as well.
Okay.
And not only should you subscribe to their podcast, you should also check them out at myriadgames.com. And he is your friend in the gaming business.
You're such a shill.
I am.
All right. Next email. Thank you again, Mike.
I bought controlling interest in Myriad Games.
Okay,
I don't know if I told you.
I got another one here. Okay. All right. All right. We've got from Jason Brown. He says, "Hello, I just heard you talk about the annual Formula D tournament. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about how that is run. I'm thinking of running something similar for the youth at my church, and I was wondering if you had any tips. Thanks, Jason Brown."
We're pulling all the appropriate ones here.
That's true. You know what? I'm actually probably not going to go into great detail about the Formula D tournament because it wasn't my tournament. And
well,
it
can
was
still say how it's run. Give credit where it's due.
Well, I know. I mean, it was Stephen Conway and Dave Coulson from The Spiel kind of put the thing together. And so if you really want the full skinny, I would suggest emailing Stephen at thespiel.net or Dave at thespiel.net because that was their turn. You're shaking your head at me.
Lazy.
I'm not lazy. It was their tournament.
Oh, my goodness.
The basic idea was that you had...
They'll spend two hours talking about it.
Please stop. the basic idea is that you have a some sort of time trial. And I don't know the specifics of how they came up with this, but it's different every year, and it usually has nothing to do with the game itself, but some way of ranking all of your participants from 1 to X. And then you have a number of Formula D maps set up, and they have 4 players per map. And you know, everybody gets a little car. They usually have a stack of papers. They only use some kind of modified rules where you have brakes and tires, and you can use gas and engine points and things like that. But some of the extra things like weather and that kind of stuff, they just really streamline the rules and make it real easy. And so instead of having, like, I know the new version of Formula D has a little, you know, gear shift things. You know, if you're playing with 20 people, you don't have usually enough of those. So they just print out little sheets of paper and give little golf pencils out, and they have little pawns that represent your gear shift. And so it's on the paper there. So that makes it real easy. And so then what happens is that they have a, I'm just basically going and telling you the whole thing. Email Dave and Steve anyway, because they're nice guys. But
I tricked you.
The person who's in the very last place of the tournament, they are in control of the timer. And there's a series of timed rounds, and then the time is variable. And so whoever is in last place will pull out that that number, and they'll set the timer, and then they'll say go. They're the only person who knows how long that round is. And then everybody will start playing, and you basically play until the timer is up. And then you kind of rank yourselves at that table. Whoever is in the top two positions will move up a table. Whoever's in the bottom two positions will move down a table. And that just continues until you get to the very last piece of paper. And then wherever everybody is sitting, that's sort of the final set. You then play one lap game, and then whoever wins, you know, that ranking is the final ranking. So the whole goal is you kind of move back and forth trying to get up to that top table so that you're there at the very end. So
and you went from what position to fifth?
I went from I think 22nd to fifth.
So no account works now. That's quite a feat.
Yeah. So, and there's a lot of tables there too. So it's real nice because it's scalable. You can really, you know, have and if you have an odd number and you don't have a full four at the end, you just basically put that odd number at the very last table. So I think we had like three at the last table in this game. I think the year before I played, it was just two at the last table.
And so, do they have multiple copies of the game or?
Oh, yes. Okay. They have. Oh, I think Dave owns like all the tracks. All of them. Wow. Yeah. And so then they have multiple sets of dice. And so, you know,
it's a game I need to pick up.
It's a good one, yeah. There's the, after I said I wasn't going to say it, that's basically how the tournament is run.
And let us know how your event goes.
Please do, yeah, because it's a fun one, and Steven and Dave just did a really great job of putting it together. So there you go. Got one more.
Cody's
picking up the last page. Yep. All right, go ahead.
And this is a great one to end on.
All right.
From our good friend Alan Stucker.
Alan.
He says, Cody and John, just wanted to drop you a line and congratulate you on reaching episode 50. I've listened to the podcast almost from the beginning. He and his daughters were our first contest winner.
That's right.
Yep.
Well, not our first contest winner, actually. They were one of our biggest contest winners.
One of our biggest contest winners. Yeah. That's right. Sorry. And you continue to produce a quality podcast. I really like the recent changes you've made. Keep up the fantastic work, and congratulations again. And we just want to give a shout out, you know, to Alan and his daughters and folks, you know, like Toby Otero, who have been with us from the beginning. I know there's a lot of you out there.
Yeah.
But I remember talking with these guys right when we started, and, you know, it's like people are listening to us. So.
Oh, yeah. It was great from the very beginning to get that kind of encouragement. And now, we get a lot of emails and a lot of voicemails in the inbox, and we just appreciate all of it. And to know that you guys are out there listening and like what we do is really means a lot to us.
Absolutely. So I think we'll close the inbox for now.
Shut the door.
End it on a high note.
All right.
And what do you say we close out the show?
Let's do it. All right, so that just about wraps up episode 51 of Game On with Cody and John. A few things we want to mention before we go. One is that you might remember from the last episode that we talked about having a contest, and we were encouraging folks to join and follow us on Twitter, because we have revamped and revitalized the Game On Podcast Twitter feed, and we're posting a lot more often on that.
And that's at Game On Podcast.
Yeah, that's right, at Game On Podcast. And so you may have noticed if you're following us on Twitter that during this past week we posted a contest, and the prize for the contest was a copy of 10 Days in the Americas, courtesy of Out of the Box Games. And this is another one of the great 10 Days series, which we really enjoy. And so we posted a question on our Twitter feed. And Cody, what was the question that we posted?
The question was, what was the first ship to officially cross the Panama Canal?
Officially cross the Panama Canal.
Right. Now, there's a few red herrings in there. There was a ship, I forget the name of it off the top of my head, that crossed unofficially, I guess, before the
Cristobal, something like that. Yeah, anyway.
Yes, the Cristobal.
Okay.
And then there was a French ship that was the first one to cross it both way, you know, to basically use it going both ways.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
But that's not what we asked. The first ship to officially
Yeah, on the day that it opened officially, yeah. The first ship was the
SS Ancon.
SS Ancon.
So yes. We posted that on Twitter. A lot of people guessed, and our winner was at unboxed_blog.
Unboxed blog,
which is a gaming blog. I scanned it. Looks fine.
Yeah, very cool. So congratulations, Unboxed blog.
That's right.
And you know, we'll be sending you a copy of 10 Days in the Americas. So
well
you know,
done.
Yeah, very nice.
Well done.
So, you know, there's lots of different ways that we're going to be doing contests. Twitter's just one of them. We won't be doing that every time, but it's something we wanted to try out this time, see if it worked, and it seemed to.
So listen to Wayne on the outro here. He'll tell you all the ways to get connected to it.
All those different possible ways. And so I think are we done?
I think so.
Let's go play some Alien Frontier.
Let's do it.
All right, well, so until next time.
Game on.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games, on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at gameonpodcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On!